If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Oh, yeah, time to rise and grind on a Tuesday morning right here on the Sports Grid Network, Sirius XM Channel 159. Donnie Wrightside joined by Ben Stevens shortly here, and we got an action-packed show for you today on a Tuesday. Now, for me, you guys understand, basking in the glory of the NFL season, the Philadelphia Eagles championship, the parade on Friday, it's now time to get down to business. And specifically in the NFL, which we'll get to in just a few moments, business is about to go down. But on this show today, we have a nice option to talk topics of the NFL next year while we have that down period before the NBA season starts back up. Wednesday with one game, Thursday the full slate. So let's get into it. The 7-7, the hottest topics across the sports landscape, which includes, oh, you guys know me. You really do. When I talk about the Cincinnati Bengals, it's with a lot of joy. Why? Because they have such talented players and an owner that just doesn't want to spend money. So as you'll see now, the Bengals are aiming to keep deals together now with Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Trey Hendrickson, which means they actually want to spend money. I don't believe it. Now, also, one of the key figures drops yesterday was with the Bengals, the franchise tag, which is going to be placed on T. Higgins. Here's the issue we have with that. T. Higgins got placed with the franchise tag just last year alone, which meant he got a pretty good sum of money. And I've been no stranger on this network multiple times saying, you got to be kidding me, T. Higgins. You must have the worst agent in professional sports, because the goal of a wide receiver and his agent on the top pay table is to get as much guaranteed money as you can. So let's just say last year, coming out to what, $22, $23 million that he gets. If he gets tagged, he does get a 20% increase in that salary. But understand this. Let's just call an even round number of $50 million. So he gets tagged last year and tagged this year, which means $50 million guaranteed. Hey, Donnie, that's good money out there. You got to be kidding me. This guy's going to make a lot. Yes, in this day and age, it is a lot of money, but not to the top wide receivers in the game who multiple guys last year, just including Ja'Marr Chase, who's going to be getting paid this year. Let's not account for that just yet. CeeDee Lamb in Dallas, over $100 million in guaranteed funds. Justin Jefferson, over $100 million in guaranteed funds. I also believe A.J. Brown, with his extension, $81 million in guaranteed funds. So if those guys end up getting hurt, what happens there? They have all that money in their bank account. If you look at T. Higgins, he gets injured. He's only guaranteed what he has this season, and then probably coming back from a devastating injury, that's not going to work in his favor. So let's take the Bengals at their word and say, we want to sign all of our players, despite the previous history of them not really wanting to spend any money outside on the quarterback with Joe Burrow. So we'll see where it goes for the Cincinnati Bengals, but I'm not changing my stance at all. And I do think yesterday you slapped that tag on. So what does that mean? You tag T. Higgins, you're going to pay Ja'Marr Chase $100+ million in guaranteed funds. Then you're going to play Hendrickson. I don't believe it one bit in Cincinnati. We'll see where it actually plays out. Let's get to the college basketball scene last night, because it was hot. It was jumping, but it wasn't a big card. The Duke Blue Devils. Now, I got to admit where I was wrong, and I'm going to admit where I was right in just a little bit. Duke 80, Virginia 62, covering as an 18-point winner there. Line, let's just say, two touchdowns at the FanDuel Sportsbook, around 15, maybe 15 and a half that you were looking at. Duke was clearly the better team all the way through. You look at the points here, 52% on the road for the Duke Blue Devils, 39% from three-point range, 81% as a team from the free throw line. But I told you yesterday, Even though the Virginia Cavaliers were scoring in the 70s multiple times over the past week and a half, I thought this game would actually stay under with Virginia scoring 58 and a half points or less. They got the 62. I took the loss, but check out the Duke Blue Devils here. 23-3 on the season, and which usually a very tough ACC, which isn't this year, 15-1 in conference play, careening towards a number one overall seed. And the Virginia Cavaliers, new coach this year, hasn't worked out all that well. How about 13-13 in overall this year? In conference play, 6-9, just not working out. But let's head out to where your boy Donnie was right. I told you yesterday the videos were circulating around, obviously, the Sports Grid Network. You know what? I'll take the slight underdog in this one on the road with the Arizona Wildcats. They won yesterday, 74-67 over the Baylor Bears in a big battle in the Big 12, which now sees the Arizona Wildcats improving to 12-3 in conference play and the Baylor Bears dropping to 8-7. In that game, you had four players from the Arizona Wildcats in the starting lineup scoring double digits or more. You take a look at the Baylor Bears as a team. Home, you're supposed to shoot better. 40% total from the floor, which included 22% from three-point range. But how about this? 72% from the free throw line, making 18 free throws. You take a look at Arizona, 14 of 18 from the free throw line for close to 78%. Going on the road and still winning a game by margin at only 22% from three-point range is impressive. Why? Because they shot 48% from the floor, also out-rebounded the Baylor Bears 37-31. We are getting close. We talked about it yesterday, just a few weeks out from Selection Sunday. These games on that top line are certainly going to be able to improve, or let's just say not improve, your seeding there. Arizona big win in the top 20, bouncing back in an effort after that loss to Houston. If we go on to hockey, was anybody interested yesterday in hockey? Well, you wanted to see the final in the Four Nations tournament be Team Canada versus the United States. And guess what? We're getting that. Why? Canada yesterday with a 5-3 victory over Finland. You might look at that final score and say to yourself, hey, man, that was an easy walk-away victory all the way through, and it probably should have been. How about Canada taking a 4-0 lead in that game, only to see this game 4-3 late in the third period? Canada tacks on an extra goal to cover the puck line. They win 5-3. Nathan MacKinnon with two goals in that. Connor McDavid with a goal and an assist, finishing with a plus one. You might also think the nightcap was a little bit of a shocker in the Four Nations tournament. Why? Because Sweden beat the United States 2-1 in Boston. Oh, no! Didn't matter in that game. The U.S. was all the way through. Auston Matthews actually didn't play in that game, but it doesn't matter because we are setting up everything for Thursday night's action. And BWS just in time to keep it in Boston, brother. How about this? The Boston Red Sox. Rafael Devers, he doesn't want to move from third base. It's like, I don't want to move here and be the host of the show, Ben. That's your job. We're not going to complicate things here. Let's keep it the same.
DRS, I apologize for the technical gaps here in our studio, and that could be said for Rafael Devers yesterday as well. Yep. At least a miscommunication, if you will, back in the winter of 2021 when former team president and GM, or baseball operations, whatever you want to call him, Chaim Bloom, told him, listen, Rafi, you're our third baseman forever. Couldn't fast forward into the future when Alex Bregman signed a deal. We thought Bregman would be moving over to second base despite winning a gold glove for the Astros in the American League at the hot corner this past season. Devers didn't even need his translator yesterday, DRS, to simply say, no, I play third. Seems like it's a relationship and a situation in Beantown off to a swell start.
Yeah, it is off to a swell start. You also see some guys coming over from other teams saying, look, I'm not going to rock the boat at this point. Most notably, A-Rod coming over to the Yankees when Derek Jeter played shortstop. And we still all knew A-Rod was a better shortstop than Derek Jeter at the time, but he had to stay at third base. Why? Because the captain was like, look, man, this is my spot at shortstop. I'm not moving here. So I can't blame Rafael Devers for saying, I don't want to move, because also, you're creatures of habit. You're used to playing third base. Like, hey, do you want to not play third base and just DH so I only get like five plate appearances? I barely touch the baseball. Am I in the game? I don't mind it. I don't mind Devers sticking up for this. Say, no, I'm not moving here. Leave me alone.
Yeah, I completely love it. Good for Rafael Devers. Stand your ground. Alex Cora, the manager in Boston, does not seem as convinced. Speaking of moving positions, but this one not because of an acquisition. Health, Mike Trout is being moved to right field, DRS, by the Los Angeles Angels in order to prioritize his health and keep him out of center field tracking down fly ball. Since Mike Trout won the 2019 American League MVP, he has played just 45% of all potential games in the last five Major League Baseball seasons.
Yeah, good move here by the Angels. You want to just have the guy play starting in April all the way through to September. The best way to do that is limit the damage on the body, which playing center field damages your body. Good move to right field for Trout.
And let's talk some more extensions around MLB. The final hot stove as we enter spring training. Geraldo Perdomo, the young shortstop for the Arizona Diamondbacks, signs a big extension, DRS, through the 2026 season.
Dodgers are laughing at that extension. Is that all you paid for that guy here? Check out our payroll here. No, seriously, it's a pretty good move by the D-backs. Yeah. Lock him up for quite some time.
I said starts or through 2026. Starts in 2026. Sorry, a bit of chaotic morning. College basketball next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the early line on Sports Grid. It is a Tuesday night ahead of a huge Tuesday night slate in college basketball. Looking back on a Monday evening, Tuesday morning, Monday night, Tuesday night ahead. Again, chaotic morning here in studio. DRS, let's look back on what we saw last night in college basketball, including the number three team in the nation, the Duke Blue Devils, on the road in Virginia against the Cavaliers. Of course, it has not been the usual season for UVA that perhaps we expect, with a chaotic start to their year just about 2 weeks before the season got started, and Tony Bennett stepping down after 15 seasons as the head coach at Virginia. But the Cavs had won three in a row entering last night. They were 5-1 against the number in their last six games, booked as an underdog in ACC affairs. But enter the best team in the conference and one of the best teams in the country. Duke wins big yet again, even on the road, putting up 80 against UVA, 80-62, the victory for the Blue Devils. Duke now improves to 15-1 in ACC action. They cover as a 14.5 point favorite. 15 wins out of 16 conference games, 10-6 against the spread as well.
Yeah, it was a big game for Duke. And by the way, early that second half, around 10 minutes ago, they're up 25 points. I like the under 58.5, Ben, as my team total for the Virginia Cavaliers. 29 at the break, right on pace at that point. They actually scored 11 points in the first 10 minutes here. Said 40 points with 10 minutes ago. I'm like, I'm in great shape. But when you get the blowout, veterans go to the bench. It's a little bit more free-flowing game. They end up scoring 62 points. But I think we can agree, the Duke Blue Devils, by far the best team in the ACC, just handling their business on the road, dropping 80, like in the pace. Like, hey, maybe scored 80 yeah. against the Virginia Cavaliers. That used to be something, not so much longer anymore. 6-9 in conference play, just a 500 team for the Virginia Cavaliers. But Duke continues to roll, even on the road against pack line style defenses. They're putting up points.
80 points for Duke last night. DRS, you mentioned the veterans. Not so many veterans on this young yeah. Dukies team when you're led by a bunch of freshmen who all scored 17 points last night. Cooper Flagg, Donnie's guy, Con, you know what to call him, Knipple, yep. and Isaiah Evans off the bench, all scoring 17 to lead Duke. Again, 15-1. Straight up in ACC play. More than likely, the Blue Devils going to win this conference. However, Clemson, not all that far behind, just two conference losses, and does have the victory against the Blue Devils so far this season. But Duke in pole position. Donnie, 10-6 against the spread. Pretty good cover percentage. Not overwhelming. It's because they're often booked as 14.5 point favorites, as we saw last night. Average margin of victory just shy of 20 points per game. And it should be noted for this Virginia team, 15 ACC games for the Wahoos. They've gone over in 12 of those. Let's talk more Cooper Flagg last night. He had a double-double in the opening half, finishes with 17 points and 14 boards. He is still the odds-on favorite to win the Wooden Award. But after a stellar performance once again in a huge road victory on Saturday, Auburn's Jahni Broom, not all that far behind at plus 120. It does seem to be a two-player race for the National Player of the Year hardware.
It does. And let's see where it actually falls out, because you're looking at Duke. Like, if Duke can get to that number one spot, you get those extracurriculars like talk about, where it's like, okay, Flag will get the edge. If Auburn stays up top there, you know that you're also going to get the edge there if you're talking about Broome. So it's a really good swing as we head on out. It is a regular season award at this point. So you're looking at Duke saying, okay, where is their, we like to call it, Heisman moment in college basketball, right? We don't really have that for Duke, but each and every night it feels like the SEC, you get a boost because of how many top 10 teams and top 20 teams you are playing on a night-to-night basis. So the edge technically might go to Broome if he stays healthy throughout, but it just looks like Cooper Flagg came in as, like, we expected him to win that, and it looks like right now, hey, look, minus 170 price to win it. We're not surprised by that. He's been very good on a very good Duke team. That equates to really a good amount of votes he's going to get.
It's also narrative, right? Cooper Flagg was the prince that was promised in Durham this year. He has delivered on that very high expectation. There is no doubt about it. You see the numbers, 20 points per game, 8 boards per game, 4 dimes per game. He's doing it all, as is Jahni Broome for the nation's number one team. Auburn has stayed at the top of the AP Top 25 now for 6 consecutive weeks. Let's get to some Big 12 action yesterday in Waco. As Donnie called it, Arizona, a slight road dog against the Baylor Bears, comes up with an outright victory, 74-67. The victory for the Cats on the road in Waco. Again, outright as a slight 1.5-point underdog. A total of 151.5 stays under. The Tennessee transfer, Tobe Owaka, he had 14 points and 12 boards to lead Arizona to a big conference road win in Big 12 play.
Yeah, sometimes you got to turn it around, right? After that win at Kansas, or excuse me, after the win against Texas Tech, who was ranked, you had the back-to-back losses to Kansas State and Houston. No shame in their game. It's a tough conference, but also going to Baylor, it's not having a great season, but still, as we talk about so many times, it's really hard to win on the road, specifically in Power 5 conferences, to go on the road and hold off Baylor. I expected that to happen, as they weren't favorites yesterday. It wasn't like Duke rolling in as a 14.5-point favorite that we just saw. They were underdogs here, looking to stave off a 3-game losing streak possibility, and they did that. Good win for them.
5 games for Zona as a dog this year, all in Big 12 action, DRS. They are 3-2 straight up and against the number. They have gone under in 4 of their 5 games as an underdog. Arizona, as you saw there, now 19th in the country, dropped 2 games last week to move back in the poll, but good to snap that skid. This is a good Baylor team. Not a great Baylor team, as we have often seen in Waco under Scott Drew. DRS yesterday, 7th Big 12 loss for the Bears. It now confirms a 3rd consecutive season of 7 losses at least in Big 12 play. Last time Baylor lost at least 8 games in conference action back in the 2018-19 season. Quickly to women's college basketball, a new number one team after some chaos a week ago, Notre Dame atop the poll for the first time since 2019. Big victory for the Fighting Irish yesterday in a top 15 tilt against Duke, 64-49. Hannah Hidalgo leads a great Notre Dame squad this year.
How about that? 23-2 on the season, a perfect 4-0 in conference play at this point. And Notre Dame looks like they have the goods. It's a guard-driven league once you get into March Madness. And is there a better guard out there playing right now than Hannah Hidalgo top? Nope, I don't think so. Looking good for Notre Dame.
We'll talk more about the women's side of college basketball a little bit later on in the show. But let's talk the bracket and who's going to be a one seed in men's college hoops next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are under 4 weeks away from Selection Sunday. A couple of days ago on a Saturday, we got the early bracket preview from the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee, the top 16 seeds around the nation, how they are perceiving college hoops this season on the men's side. Again, a lot can change in these final few weeks of the regular season and, of course, throughout conference tournament action. But DRS, on the one line on Saturday afternoon, 3 of the 4-1 seeds out of the same conference from the SEC. Alabama, Auburn, Florida, and Duke rounding out those 4 teams on the one line. In order, it was Auburn, Alabama, Duke, and Florida. That before, of course, 1-2 in Tuscaloosa, and the Tigers taking down the Tide on the road. Here are the odds right now. to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Auburn, a very hefty, hefty favorite, minus 20,000. Donnie, I would be absolutely stunned if something happened down the tail end of this season for Auburn, SEC regular season, SEC tournament, for the Tigers not to be on the one line or even, in fact, the number one overall seed in the tournament. Duke, a hefty favorite. Alabama, a big favorite as well. Donnie, you see five teams with a minus money price. Houston, not necessarily chalky, but I'll tell you this right now. The value on the board is in one spot. It's the Florida Gators playing like a one seed, deserving of the one line, and you don't have to lay a lot of money for it on Florida right now at minus 115.
I'm interested to see, too, because you look at that graphic, and you know it's SEC heavy, which means heading down the stretch, these teams will play each other a lot, and to the victor goes the spoils, as we like to say, but you still then have to play them in conference play. If we do shift our odds down the board, Ben, you take a look at Iowa State getting over 10-1, currently at a 16-1 price, say, oh, that's interesting, like a top 10 team, what do they have to do? They do play at Houston coming up, which is on February 22nd. If they can win that game, obviously, that would be massive. But understand this. They're going to play Colorado, who's bad. Oklahoma State on the road, not that great. Arizona, who's a quality team, but where do they get them, Ben? At home, and then BYU at home, and then on the road in the Octagon of Doom at Kansas State. Then, of course, they're going to have to play in the Big 12. But if there's a chance where those SEC teams just beat each other and play a little round robin, and you get an Iowa State victory on the road against Houston, and then somehow maybe play for the Big 12 championship. Let's just say it's against Houston and lose that game. There's still a chance you can get that number one seed. I'm just looking at price points. If I had to bet on a number one, I actually think Houston at minus 110 makes a lot of sense to be on that one line because they're supposed to win that game on the 22nd, going head-to-head with Iowa State, which would be a nice win on their marker as well. But if I'm looking just for that bigger price, give me Iowa State at this point.
Yeah, listen, I don't mind the look, DRS. But there's not a ton of quad one opportunities that remain for the Cyclones in this regular season stretch. I don't say ton. I mean, they're not playing a gauntlet where five of their final six games are all quad one spots. As of right now, the road game at Houston, a home game against Arizona, and barely the road test in the Little Apple against K-State in the Octagon of Doom. Kansas State right now, 75th in the net. That would be your final line of a quad one road opportunity. I don't know how much this changes unless, to your point, one of those SEC teams really takes a slide down the home stretch of this regular season or is ousted one and done in the SEC tournament. And you're right, they could, but I wonder how that works against them. If you are playing the best in the SEC, does it really hurt your resume, at least based on the metrics the committee uses, to knock you off that one line based on what you have proven so far? Again, I think Florida is a really good bet in that market if you can get it. But as we see there, five of those 10 best prices to be a one seed from the SEC. St. John's is an interesting one, Donnie. 250-1. The Johnnies on Saturday in that early bracket preview checked in as the fourth and final four seed. That would be 16 overall. That would be a very large rise to be on the one line come Selection Sunday.
No, you're right. And you look at the remaining games, too. We love that victory in the Garden against Creighton, but then it's DePaul, it's UConn, it's Butler, it's Seton Hall, and then finally a top 22 in Marquette. As long as they can hold on and not lose any games over the next, week to week and a half at this point, then you head into the Big East tournament. It would be a long shot at that point, but hey, we've seen crazier things happen. You run the table, then run the table through the Big East. A couple of those teams struggle. The conversations do have to be had, which is fun to talk about it about a month out.
For sure. Big one for Purdue tonight. The Boilermakers, after dropping both games last week, on the road in East Lansing. Will the winner of the Big Ten regular season crowd, Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, maybe a Wisconsin and Maryland, see their seed line increase? Maybe not quite to the one line. NBA big picture question next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
One final full day of the NBA All-Star break. Tomorrow we are back in action with one game, a rescheduled game in Los Angeles between the Lakers and the Hornets. So, DRS, here we are at the All-Star break in full for one final time. It gives us a chance to reset and look at those big questions all around the association for this stretch run and beyond. Of course, a ton of conversation yesterday, today, this week, in the immediate aftermath of All-Star Weekend and the change in format that we saw on All-Star Sunday night. Not just an All-Star game, but All-Star games. The product itself, not overly exciting. Those TV viewership numbers should be coming out shortly, and that will be a serious indication as well. But a big report yesterday, DRS, from Ryan Glasspiegel of Front Office Sports on some potential changes ahead for All-Star Weekend starting next year in 2026. It should be noted when NBA takes over the television broadcast in production for All-Star Weekend, which has basically been on TNT for a very long time. Some proposed potential changes in earlier start time. 5 p.m. Eastern time for the All-Star game, tipped off this previous Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. A complete change in format. A $1 million prize for a one-on-one tournament and a guarantee, perhaps, of big names in the dunk contest. As we play buy or sell, DRS, those are the proposed changes that inform this conversation. In the buy or sell to you, NBA All-Star Weekend is unfixable.
I sell that. I sell that because it's an easy sport to fix. But well, let's go over the layers here because I do like where some of these ideas are coming from. And I do feel, Ben, at times I am Nostradamus of sports. This is why I do. Like, people think I joke around saying I want to be commissioner of every league. Ben, since you have known me here on this sports network, what do I scream at? Put the games on when every single person in the country can watch them and watch the ratings rise. Simple. 5 o'clock start time. How come when everybody was watching the All-Star games in the 80s and early 90s, Ben, it was an afternoon on a Sunday, even if it was out in Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco, wherever at this point? It only makes sense. Why are you starting something at 8 o'clock when you want to grow this? Oh, but the West Coast, you know, 5 p.m. start. Nonsense. More people live on the East Coast and Central Time than the rest of the country. So if you put it on at 5, every single person in the country, if they want to watch, can watch it. Point number two here, $1 million in a one-on-one tournament. We don't need that. Throw that right out the window here. Unless you're putting $100 million. Or how about this? The winner of it gets the guaranteed max contract extension in the NBA. Then you'll watch everybody come out of the woodwork and play in the one-on-one tournament. The final piece there, big names in the dunk contest. Isn't that easy? Just put the best players in there. Like if you have 24 All-Stars, put all 24 in the dunk competition. If they don't want to participate there, they don't come here. It is an easy fix. And Ben, we're not talking about supremacy of everybody's going to watch even more than the NBA Finals. Just make us want to sit down and say, you know what? What are you doing tonight? I want to watch the All-Star game. Superstars playing hard in a semi-pickup game. We can all get down and just enjoy that for at least a few hours. Yeah. It's easily fixable.
So I actually sell the notion that buy the notion that NBA All-Star Weekend is unfixable. I just think we are lost the plot. I don't think we're all that close to fixing All-Star games. I think we are trying. I think it is a media conversation. I think we sit here and have these sweeping takeaways. But I don't really think it needs to be fixed. I think All-Star games in this current format should just be a glorified pickup game. If you are going to say a one-on-one tournament is the fix to NBA All-Star Sunday night, I am going to argue that that is no longer an All-Star game. That is its own thing in its entirety. And Donnie, we had some NBA players asked about, hey, would you be interested in a one-on-one tourney? Would you play Anthony Edwards? Oh, for sure. I go out there and whoop some you-know-what. Giannis, yeah, I would love to play in a one-on-one tournament. Donovan Mitchell basically said, I would do it. I think it's cool. I'm not sure everybody would be bought in to this idea. Of course, this follows what Unrivaled has done in their one-on-one tournament that has been exciting basketball that NBA players have vouched for and have enjoyed watching. It's a very different thing to say, hey, that's cool, and hey, yeah, I'll play and risk my reputation as one of the best hoopers in this league as I get cooked by a second-year player and a first-year All-Star. So, Donnie, to me, again, NBA All-Star Weekend is unfixable because we are getting further and further away from an All-Star game, a television production, All-Star games, and now a one-on-one tournament for a $1 million prize. That's not an All-Star game. That's not All-Star Weekend to me. Yeah, big names in the dunk contest. We have heard that for 25 years, and it hasn't happened. So I don't believe it's going to happen. I buy the idea that NBA All-Star Weekend is unfixable, but I say that with a caveat that although it might be unfixable, that's okay. We can just try to enjoy the product that we have if we stop trying to make it this gimmicky, weird thing for casual fans that don't even tune in to watch in the first place.
Yeah, but also you have to understand that that one-on-one competition is also with the All-Star game. So that'd be like the NBA Saturday night, per se, with the dunk competition, one-on-one competition, and three-point contest. Well, that's how it's listed, like potential changes. 5 p.m. start for the All-Star game, then one-on-one tournament and big names in the dunk contest. So I took it as a whole, like that was some of the ideas they're looking to fix the weekend, as that's just part of that. Yeah, no. They take away the All-Star game, put a one-on-one. Like I'm actually going to fly out to the game to protest why the game's actually happened at that point. Yeah. So I just thought that was like an extra layer of sort of like, okay, maybe more people will tune in. I have no interest in a one-on-one tournament, to be honest, unless it is for a super max contract that a rookie might be able to get, like Mac McClung wins the thing, gets a super max contract. But now, come on, man, who's going to take that up? Like, you have to like roll the dice or pick out of a hat. Like, congratulations, Spurs. You're paying Mac McClung $400 million over the next 6 years. Like, that would be hilarious.
So I was locked out of the article needing a login to read it in its entirety. I thought that was the proposed change to make a $1 million one-on-one tournament in lieu of the three games that we saw this year. Yeah. Still believe it's unfixable. All-Star Weekend, at least to our expectations of what it used to be. However, now that I know there will be an All-Star game as well, and not in lieu of the All-Star game, a $1 million one-on-one tournament, there is zero chance that one-on-one tourney is going to happen. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Not happening throughout All-Star Weekend. With the risk of extra playing, the risk of having to be out there and competitive while everybody else is sitting out, and you're not going to get the biggest superstars in the world in that tournament. I don't know, Donnie. For me, I basically fall here, right, in kind of the conversation that we had yesterday. We got so mad at things in years past. Oh, these guys aren't playing. All right, let's make it an Elam ending to at least make the fourth quarter competitive. Well, that's stupid. None of us can do math. All right, then let's just go back to a pickup and we'll have captain's draft and maybe the guys will be more bought in from that. Oh, it didn't matter? Okay, let's go back to East and West. It's just glorified pickup. It's layup lines. It's dumb. All right, let's try to make it incentivized and a race for 40. Why is Kevin Hart on the floor? We are trying to make all of these changes to something that should have just been fun and appreciate it for what it is, and understanding that unlike the 1980s, we can see every one of these guys instantaneously each and every night they play in an NBA game.
Like, the fans didn't ruin it. The NBA itself didn't ruin it. You know, the commercials didn't ruin it because they've always been there. The players actually ruined it. They let you know how this game is like, you know what? I just want to go out there and party, pop bottles, VIP for the weekend, mess around and just get home, and then take an extra 3 to 4 days to go to Cancun before the season actually begins. We would never have any issues here. Nobody would care if they just somewhat cared about an NBA All-Star game. And we're okay, Ben. 169 to 158 is the final. That's fun. They played a little bit of defense, a lot of showcase. But when you're scoring a couple hundred points, that's ridiculous, man. It is.
Completely agree. More big picture questions around the NBA as Fire Sell continues next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Buy or sell around the association on a final full day of the All-Star break. Back in action with actual NBA regular season games tomorrow. Just one. That would be the Lakers and the Hornets before most of the league gets underway on Thursday evening. In DRS, starting this home stretch of the NBA campaign, everybody out west looking up at the Oklahoma City Thunder. Everybody out east looking up at the Cleveland Cavaliers, and everybody else except for the Boston Celtics looking up at the C's, the reigning NBA champs, in the two spots in the Eastern Conference standings. Right now, where things stand in the odds board, everybody looking up at the Thunder in the Western Conference, and in the Eastern Conference, it's still the Celtics as a minus money favorite. We have now at the All-Star break, as the markets have reset, and maybe some more investment for this stretch run when we return from the All-Star break, some more wagers into the Celtics and the Thunder, odds on favorites in minus money to win their respective conference crown. For the Celtics to see the Thunder in the NBA Finals, of course, that's the most likely matchup and the shortest price at plus 220. So Donnie, buy or sell, the NBA Finals matchup will indeed be the Celtics versus the Thunder.
I'm selling it because we're still too early to determine who's going to be the best team by the time we have, what, late May and the finals start to begin in early June. So for me, I will sell. Now, that doesn't say that the Boston Celtics, I don't think, are going to get to the finals or Oklahoma City. Because if you're just saying right now, and the question is asking, the two best teams in the NBA, forget about record-wise, you probably just go pedigree, would be these two teams, and they should match up in the final. But as we said, nothing is a given here, which includes the Boston Celtics probably not being the number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference. Why? They're 5.5 games back against a quality Cleveland Cavaliers team. So then Boston will have to go on the road, at least, let's just say, for the Eastern Conference Finals to make it to the NBA Finals. Then you're talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder, who I love, are fantastic. And yes, right now, far and away, Ben, the best team in the Western Conference. But you are also mixing in teams like the Denver Nuggets, the Los Angeles Lakers, the LA Clippers. And you might say, wait a minute, where's the pedigree on those teams? What I'm saying is Oklahoma City is not like, hey, they're the Kansas City Chiefs in the NFL. Every year they play in the Western Conference Finals and get to the finals here. They haven't done that yet. So until they get to that mountaintop, there's still going to be questions that need to be asked. It's easy to say both of these teams will make it, but I'm going to sell that. Still too much basketball game left to play, yeah. And a lot of other teams are going to factor in here.
I'm going to sell it as well, but ever so slightly. Because I think you could give me a couple of bets, a make or miss, or this team versus the field, Donnie, and I would actually take one option. What I mean by that is, if you were to give me a bet, will the Celtics and or the Thunder, at least one of those two teams, reach the NBA Championship Series? I would say yes. I would take that bet. One or the other, potentially both. But if you were to say the field versus this matchup, I would probably also take the field. So I think one of these two teams for sure into the NBA Finals, but I'm going to sell this notion right now because that was not the question that was asked. It was Boston versus Oklahoma City in the NBA Finals. Don, I think it is more likely that Boston is the one of these two teams into the NBA Finals than I do Oklahoma City. Ooh. The Thunder are a very promising team. We have expected to see their year-over-year improvement over the past 2 to 3 seasons. And OKC has delivered exactly on that. Last year, losing in the second round of the Western Conference postseason to Dallas in 6 games, learning, you would think, from their postseason lumps. But now we have to see it. We don't have to see it with the Celtics, the reigning NBA champs, and a team that factored in to the Eastern Conference Finals a ton in the last half decade. And to your point about playoff pedigree, there are a few other teams in the Western Conference. The Nuggets, certainly LeBron and the Lakers, and now adding Luka Doncic, and a couple others that I think could stand in the way of Oklahoma City at the end. Not like the Thunder getting upset in the opening round, and I still probably take OKC to play in the Western Conference Finals with home floor advantage, but at the end, maybe that's what knocks the Thunder off its perch. Donnie, I really do believe that until proven otherwise, I've got to see somebody really challenge the Celtics in the Eastern Conference come playoff time. You are right. It would be different this year for Boston to be on the road in Cleveland, perhaps, in an Eastern Conference Finals matchup. And although we still have the entirety of this stretch run, about 25 games or so after the All-Star break, it's a 5.5 game advantage. That's a lot of ground for the Seas to make up. The Cavaliers would really have to stumble down this stretch to even allow the Seas to sniff that number one overall seed. I still think Boston is going to win the Eastern Conference Finals, and it's not just me saying that. You can see the price at minus 140.
Yeah, and that's the pedigree they have. Just won it last year, and let's just say they do come in healthy into the playoff run. It's not as if, like, hey, you can get away in a short series, Ben, beat them best of three, best of five. You're going to beat the Celtics in a best of seven. And yes, even though if it is in Cleveland, it's still a monumental task for Cleveland to do that. But I do think they have the weapons and the pedigree to do that. But it is tougher than where we see in college football, professional football. Hey, just got to beat them and bring your best on Sunday. Anything can happen. Well, not really anything can happen in a seven-game series. The winner of that seven-game series is fairly like, oh, man, Ben, they got lucky to win that seven-game series. No, they didn't. Outside of catastrophic injury, you beat a team four times in seven games, you deserve to move on, and that's not a fluke at all. A one-game series, three-game series absolutely could be. The question's there for Oklahoma City, like, who would actually challenge them? Like, for me, probably the Denver Nuggets. If the Nuggets can get them an elevation, championship pedigree on that team, maybe the best players on the planet going toe-to-toe. But for me, I look at the Boston Celtics. Yeah, you're going to have to go through the Cavaliers, which would be tough. Also the New York Knicks. And who's to say that once you get to the playoffs with a healthy Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks, I just think that path to victory for Boston is a little bit tougher. But I do agree, if you're just saying Boston's been there, done that depth, and they should be able to get by. Yes, we should think that they're the two best teams, talking about the Thunder and the Boston Celtics. But for me, I'm just going to sell that notion because there's quality teams. A lot can happen, which includes injuries. I'll stay away from those two teams just at this point right now.
Again, I'm selling that NBA Finals matchup ever so slightly as well. I would be surprised if neither of those two clubs made it to the NBA Championship Series, but I don't know necessarily if that is going to be our exact matchup, despite what the odds makers are saying. Plus 220 for that to be the exact NBA Finals matchup before we emerge out of the All-Star break is insane. That we have two minus money odds on favorites to win their respective conferences at this moment. Let's talk the head-to-head NBA MVP race between Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Nikola Jokic next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Is the NBA MVP race all but over for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? It's what we discuss on this final full day of the NBA All-Star break here in NBA Buy or Sell. We are going to chart the MVP odds throughout this regular season so far. October 22nd on opening night, Luka Doncic actually the favorite at plus 330, but SGA not far behind. Nikola Jokic, third best number after winning three MVP awards in the last four seasons. On Christmas, it was Jokic, the short favorite, about a dollar in front of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Middle of January, for the first time, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander becomes a minus money odds on favorite to win the NBA MVP hardware. And today is February 18th at the All-Star break. DRS, SGA minus 440 to win the NBA MVP award. Nikola Jokic, second best price at plus 300. So buy or sell to you. Nikola Jokic will become the MVP favorite again at some point in this season.
You know what? I'm going to buy this. And I do think sometimes the human element does creep in. The problem is we give it to Jokic so many times, he has to average 40, 20, and 20 to even get back in the picture. When SGA has been on the cusp of an MVP specifically last year, he's playing well. His team by far is the best team in the Western Conference. So he probably should win MVP just under the criteria of Oklahoma City never gets to the finals. He played an MVP level last year. Now the team's actually proving it on the court with his play as well. So it goes hand in hand. But I always like to get back to the points, Ben, where you just throw up those, you know, mirror images and silhouettes of player A versus player B, and you just vote that way. Forget about what the team is actually doing. What is the player actually doing in the moment? And if you go side by side, 30 points to 32 points. So it's like, okay, that's close here. Then 13 rebounds to 5 rebounds, not close. 10 assists to 6 assists, not close. Steals per game, almost identical. You get the point. So, well, the better player is Nikola Jokic just based on his numbers. But again, it's the human element. It's not an algorithm that goes in that goes, you know what? We're going to feed this through like the BCS band, and the best numbers come out on the end. There's no humans that are going to pick or vote on this because we know how it works. Jokic has a couple. This could be SGA's best chance. Good team here. Let's just give it to him. But I do think there's going to be times in this season where, yes, SGA puts up eye-popping numbers. He's done that for pretty much the entire season. But you are going to get a couple of these Jokic games, Ben, that we're going to come on the early on and be like, now, wait a second. 36 points, 28 rebounds, and 19 assists, which all you know is those games catapult your odds on the FanDuel Sportsbook in your direction. So I'm going to go on the limb. I'm going to say yes. At one point, Jokic is going to cross over on SGA to keep this thing interesting on the way out before the votes come in.
Nikola Jokic, who has won 3 NBA MVP awards in the last 4 years, is putting up numbers consistent, if not better, than what he has during those MVP winning seasons. He is top 4 in all the main stat categories around the NBA. Points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game. He is basically, Nikola Jokic, averaging a 30-point, 12.5 rebound, 10-assist, triple-double throughout this season. And yet, Donnie, you see that gap in terms of the MVP odds. It is not fair. Believe me, I do not believe it is fair. But that has become expectation for Nikola Jokic. If he doesn't have a triple-double, it is more noteworthy than Nikola Jokic recording a triple-double in any given NBA game. So, Donnie, I'm going to sell that Nikola Jokic will become the NBA MVP favorite at a certain point to end out this regular season. I believe Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has won this award. I believe Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will remain a minus money favorite through the entirety of this NBA year, barring, obviously, injury, and knock on wood, that doesn't happen for SGA, who is leading the NBA in scoring 32.5 points per game this year, about 6 dimes and 5 boards per game, second in the NBA in steals per game as well, just shy of 2 thefts each and every night. And outside of that, outside of just the statistical numbers between these two individuals, it is also team success. This is what we expected out of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to lead this young OKC team to be one of the best in the NBA. They are 4 and away the best in the Western Conference, an 8-game lead right now for that number one overall seed, and more than likely going to end as the one seed when the regular season is through. In my estimation, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has already won the NBA MVP award.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's an argument that I'm probably going to lose if I say they're going to cross over because he is a heavy favorite. It's not like we're both looking at plus 100.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
Number two on this is you do have that ace in the hole where OKC, like, what would they have to do to sort of damage SGA season? Lose 10 in a row and all of a sudden the Grizzlies are the one seed or the Nuggets overtake them? It's not as if the Nuggets are 3.5 games back of the Oklahoma City Thunder and say, you know what? That's the crossover point. Great play can go into that. So probably going to happen that way where SGA takes it.
Hour number 2 in some NFL big picture questions. Next.